Welcome to the Dog Talk Show. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. You're listening to Alternative Talk 1150 AM. It's great to be here after a couple weeks off. Hi, Eric.
Hey, Julie. We missed you.
I missed you, too.
Yeah, glad to have you back here.
It's great to be back. I was on a boat for 2 weeks, so
I'm getting my land legs back.
Today, we have a special guest in the booth with us. We have Gene Hampel, who's the president of Assistance Dog Club of Puget Sound. Hi, Gene.
Hello.
Just a little bit after I get through some announcements, we're going to be talking to Jean about the world of assistance dogs, and she will be sharing her wealth of knowledge with us about various laws and considerations, what makes a good service dog, all sorts of stuff. And there's also a conference coming up here at the end of September that I'll be announcing, and then we'll also be talking a little more in depth about that, too. So before we get into this interview, I just want to talk about some upcoming events that I have mentioned in previous shows. This weekend, this Sunday, it is finally upon us. The Gilda's Club Seattle Dog Walk is this Sunday, the 26th, at Magnuson Park from 10 to 1. And Gilda's Club is a nonprofit organization that provides support for people and their families whose lives have been touched by cancer. And Gilda Radner is a famous, very funny comedian who died of ovarian cancer. And so this club was formed in her memory. They are all over the nation. And we're very excited to be at that club. I'll be doing a presentation as part of the events on pet nutrition. And my mom is actually flying out from Boston to be here for the event. She's an ovarian cancer survivor, so I'm really excited to have her with,
well, she,
with me for that.
Bringing us some chata?
I doubt it.
Ah, darn.
Nice attempt at a Boston accent, though.
It would be great to get some wicked chatter up in here.
So we've got Gilda's Club Dog Walk this Sunday, and then next weekend, July 31st and August 1st, is Wienerfest Northwest, finally. It's at Grays Harbor County Fairgrounds, and it benefits Almost Home Dachshund Rescue and advocates safe wiener dog racing. And it's a very family-friendly event. I think it's only a few dollars for admission to come. Lots of great activities for kids. All breed costume contest. Of course, the wiener dog races. And a lot of really fun stuff happening all weekend long. We'll be at that one, too, next week. And the websites, and these are also on the Dog Talk Show website, for the Gilda's Club Walk is gildasclubseattle.org. And then Wienerfest website is wienerfestnw.com. And then coming up September 25th and 26th is the Assistance Dogs at Work Conference, which we'll be talking with Eugene in more detail in a little bit. And this is a conference that is put on a partnership between the International Association of Assistance Dog Partners and the Assistance Dog Club of Puget Sound, which Gene is the president of. And it's going to be a two-day event, September 25th and 26th. It's a $90 registration for both days, and you have to register separately. So if you can go to either website, www.iaadp.org, as well as www.dogsaver.org/ADC, and that you'll be able to find registration information about that conference as well. And all of that information will also be posted on the Dog Talk Show website, which is dogtalkshow.com.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah. So a couple brief announcements, too. We do still have advertising space available on the show. So if you're interested in advertising your company, business, service, products on the Dog Talk Show, send me an email at host@dogtalkshow.com, and I will send you information about that. And we also have our very cute Dog Talk Show car stickers. If you would like to receive a car sticker or a few for free, just send me an email with your address. I'd be happy to get some out to you. I've been sending those out and starting to see them more and more on the roads, which is really fun. So Gene is the president of Assistance Dog Club of Puget Sound. Welcome, Gene.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. So tell us a little bit about your work with Assistance Dog Club of Puget Sound and how long you've been in this world.
Well, I started working with assistance dogs in 1992. And that was when I was on the board of directors for the Prison Pet Partnership Program.
Great.
And I was their director for 4 years. But when I was retiring from that, one of the things that I found that people with assistance dogs needed was a peer support group.
Mm.
And so after I retired, I started the Assistance Dog Club of Puget Sound, which is a peer support group.
Mm-hmm. And I've, you know, wondered as I learn more about the world of assistance dogs, about what happens after someone is paired with a dog, you know, what happens from that point forward? I mean, do they, you know, how do they know how to work with the dog? And
a little bit depends on where, how they got their dog.
Yeah.
If the dog is a program dog, they always have the resource of going back to the program for assistance if they start to have problems with the dog or they have questions. But programs are very busy, which is what I found at the Prison Pet Partnership Program. And so with the Assistance Dog Club, they can come to the club, and we provide educational meetings once a month. We provide a yearly conference. And so they get that support that way.
Mm-hmm.
But if people owner train a dog, then there really is very little out there for them to get support. They use the internet, which is not always the best method of training a dog, or they go to a private trainer, mm-hmm. and or they can come to a group like the Assistance Dog Club of Puget Sound for help when they were training dogs.
Mm-hmm. And I would think, too, if somebody got a dog from a program, that that program may not be local. You know, it could be from another state, and it might not be really accessible.
Most programs will limit where they place their dogs relative to the volunteers or trainers that can come out and to assist.
Mm.
Bigger programs like Guide Dogs for the Blind have trainers all over the United States.
Okay.
Smaller programs tend to limit their placements so that they can do follow-up with their clients.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes sense, definitely. So what there's lots of, you know, and this is a field that is growing so much, and, you know, there's a lot of different types of assistance dogs. So I think most people are familiar with or who have seen a guide dog for someone who's blind. But what other types of service dogs and assistance dogs are out there?
I think first, so people can understand the dual uses of terms, mm-hmm. the term service dog is the legal definition of a dog that's individually trained to perform tasks or do work for people with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Assistance dogs is a term that has been coined by Assistance Dogs International, mm-hmm. and International Association of Assistance Dogs. And they break down dogs, the umbrella term being assistance dogs, to guide dogs or dogs that guide the blind, hearing dogs or dogs that help people with hearing disabilities, and any other dog that assists a disabled person, they refer to as a service dog. But mm-hmm. legally, they're all service dogs.
Okay. So so there's hearing dogs as well as seeing eye dogs.
They're hearing dogs obviously assist people by alerting to sound.
Uh-huh.
Dogs that assist the blind do guide work. Seeing eye is a actually copyrighted term.
Okay.
Of seeing eye at Morristown, New Jersey.
Okay.
And then there are service dogs for all the other disabilities. And one of my pet peeves is putting an adjective before service dogs because that appears that the dog has the disability.
Mm.
So I prefer people to say I have a service dog who assists me with mobility.
Okay.
Or I have a service dog that assists me with mental illness.
Uh-huh.
I have a service dog that alerts me to a medical problem.
Yeah.
Rather than saying I have a seizure alert dog or I have a diabetic dog, and as we all know, the dogs do hopefully don't have those problems if they're assisting a person with disability, and it's the person who has the problem.
Yeah, and the medical alert where you know, where a dog can alert somebody before they're about to have a diabetic or like seizure alert dogs, it's just amazing. Is that something that the dogs just kind of know? Certain dogs just kind of are tuned in to that and get it? Or is that something that can be actually trained to a dog that doesn't already offer that?
I think that there are dogs out there that on their own are just very tuned in to changes in their owners, handlers.
Yeah.
I think some of the alert work can actually be taught because it is nose work. We feel that most dogs know when a person's blood sugar is high or low by the change in their body odor. Mm-hmm. And if, as a nurse, I know that if somebody was really, really sick, I could smell the fruity breath if they were a diabetic.
Mm.
But I think the dogs just pick it up so much sooner than we do. And some of that work is actually being taught as detection work.
Mm.
They're doing detection work for peanuts, mm-hmm. for children who are allergic to peanuts.
Mm-hmm.
The seizure alert dogs, which were the first of our dogs that we knew actually alerted to these events, I think they smelled the biochemical changes that were occurring in the person's body before we did. Dogs are such anticipatory learners.
Mm-hmm.
And if something happens and then something else happens, they really begin to anticipate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's take a break, and we will be back in just a few minutes with Gene Hampel, president of Assistance Dog Club of Puget Sound. You're listening to the Dog Talk Show on Alternative Talk 1150.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help.
This is Julie Forbes, dog training, behavior, and nutrition specialist, and owner of Sensitive Dog. Thoughtful guidance for you and your dog. If your dog needs basic obedience training, a behavior evaluation, or food consultation, I can help you. Call me at 206-372-7399 or visit my website, www.sensitivedog.com. I teach group obedience classes, in-home lessons, and evaluations, and a two-week intensive training program called Higher Education. Again, I'm Julie Forbes, Seattle's dog behavior training and nutrition specialist. www.sensitivedog.com.
The Natural Pet Pantry offers everything you need for feeding your pet a raw food diet. Most health issues pets face today are a result of poor diet. The Natural Pet Pantry makes raw, cooked, and custom meals for your pets, all prepared locally using only grade A meats and vegetables. Located in stores around the Puget Sound, the home delivery is available from Stanwood to Gig Harbor. Visit naturalpetpantry.com or call 206-248-1079 for more information on how to add health and longevity to your beloved pet's life. That's naturalpetpantry.com.
Do you have legal questions? Need to know where to turn?
Hi, this is Rick Gregrick, your host of Northwest Legal Compass.
Northwest Legal Compass will address your questions on a variety of legal topics, including estate planning, asset protection, real estate and business planning, and more. The legal and accounting staff of Gregrick & Associates are dedicated to providing you with superior legal and tax services. Their integrated counsel is geared to the achievement of your goals.
Visit us on the web at rjglegal.com.
Be sure and tune in every Friday at noon here on Alternative Talk 1150.
Hi, I'm Vicki St. Clair. I want to invite you to join me every Monday at noon for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. We'll talk with innovative business leaders, medical and health professionals, authors, filmmakers, adventurers, and ordinary people leading extraordinary lives. Join me Mondays at noon for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Next Monday, Dr. Judith Siegel discussing important skills for coping with intense and overwhelming emotions and sharing how we can avoid overreacting, withdrawing, or lashing out.
Check out our guest schedule at conversationslive.net and join me Mondays at noon.
Feed your mind and your body and spirit will follow. Alternative Talk 1150.
When I was younger, so much younger than today.
Welcome back to the Dog Talk Show. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. You're listening to Alternative Talk 1150 AM, and we are back today with our guest, Gene Hampel, president of Assistance Dog Club of Puget Sound. Welcome back, Gene.
Thank you.
So I'd like to talk about the conference that's coming up at the end of September, September 25th and 26th, that Assistance Dog Club of Puget Sound, your organization, is partnering with the International Association of Assistance Dog Partners to give this event to help bring people in the service dog world together to educate both trainers and people with who are partnered with service dogs. Is this open to anybody?
The conference is open to anyone. We're very interested in getting people within the business community to learn more about access for service dogs. There'll be topics like flying, Department of Transportation rules for service dogs. One of the speakers on Sunday, Don Brandon, is from the Seattle area, and he's going to be talking about how the law affects bringing a service dog to work.
Mm.
We're having an animal behaviorist speak about acquired aggression and treatment in service dogs. So there'll be something for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
One of the speakers at the IADP conference is also a local speaker who started Courthouse Dogs.
Great.
And she actually is using her son's service dog, and they are a three-party team, the dog, mom, and the son, because the son is not able to handle the dog. And she then started using the dog to provide therapy in the courtrooms, and so she'll be there speaking. So it's just there's a wide variety of information for everyone.
Mm. I was just fairly recently, a client actually had told me about the Courthouse Dogs and where they would have a dog just to support somebody who was having to testify or sort of be present to something that was very scary, to have a dog next to them that was make them feel more comfortable.
And they have found that since these dogs really have to be highly trained and very, very reliable, that they have actually gone to the original dog came from Canine Companions for Independence, and Canine Companions for Independence place what they call facility dogs that are highly trained, and just for one reason or another, not dogs that they wanted to go on as actual service dogs. And so those are the dogs that they are using in the court program, because you know that they've been so well temperament tested, and they're working with a lot of children who have to testify and have found that these dogs are really safe.
And when as you talk about that, I think that that's something to sort of go into a little bit more about what type of, what does it take for a dog to become a service dog? There's so many different types of service dogs, and a dog that might be a great guide dog for someone who's blind might not make a very good courthouse dog, and sort of really looking at each dog as an individual. And what is involved in selecting a dog, the training that's involved, where do the dogs come from typically, all that type of stuff?
The choice of where dogs come from depends pretty much on the program who is using the dogs. A lot of the programs breed their own dogs, and they have found that they can consistently get a higher bang for their buck, so to speak. More dogs out of a litter will continue on to be service dogs because they're choosing temperamentally and orthopedically sound parents, and so they're producing temperamentally and orthopedically sound puppies. Because for a dog to be a service dog, it has to have a sort of a twofold major. It has to be able to be safe in the public, so its public access skills have to be perfect. And then secondly, it has to be very trainable to do the tasks that it's needed to do to be a service dog. And there are dogs out there that will learn tasks beautifully, but being on the bus and the train and traveling and crowds of people are just overwhelming.
Yeah.
And so the dog has to be able to do both. It has to have perfect public access skills, but it also has to be highly trainable.
Yeah.
And traditionally, Labrador Retrievers, Golden Retrievers are used by programs, and I always kiddingly say it's because they'd go to the devil if the devil would take them. If you have food, they're your friend for life. Where some of the breeds, like German Shepherds, who initially were all the guide dogs were German Shepherds, they don't do well moving from a kennel to the puppy raiser, from the puppy raiser back to the trainer, from the trainer to they develop an inability to bond. And so when you're looking for a dog that's going to be a program trained dog, you want a dog that just basically loves everybody.
Right. Happy wherever they are.
Happy wherever they are. Yeah. And a lot of owner trainers make the mistake is that they get the wrong dog for the job.
Yeah.
And then they spend the poor dog's life putting a square peg in a round hole. Mm-hmm. The dog is not tall enough for the mobility work. The dog is afraid to be out in public. Service dogs are not a rehabilitation project.
Mm-hmm.
If the dog has any issues, and this we see this with the dogs coming out of the shelter, I had a 20% success rate at the prison using shelter dogs because they had health issues. You know, I don't think any dog should be out working that hasn't had its hips and elbows x-rayed because if you're asking them to, even if you're not going to do mobility work with them, if you're asking them to get up and down on all types of surfaces all day long, it just takes a toll on their body. And somebody has to speak for the dogs.
Yeah. And I think, you know, so much of it, well, first, I can tell you my cattle dogs fit into the category of very trainable, but would be terrible in public access. You know, as far as the working partnership that happens, that you have a dog that really wants to do it, you know, that's up for it, and that you're not forcing a dog that maybe doesn't really want to do this kind of work, even if they're able.
We refer to it as having a good work ethic.
Mm-hmm.
There are some dogs that would much prefer to live on the couch.
Yeah.
And try as you might, they don't look forward to doing the work. And, you know, I'm a nurse by profession, and I tell people an 8-hour shift is a long time to be that compassionate and that loving. And yet people are asking dogs to do it 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
And for guide dogs, for example, guide dogs are off duty whenever their harness is off. And so they don't work 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
But a seizure alert dog or a diabetic alert dog or a dog that's helping somebody with mental illness is really has to be attuned all the time. And that can get really, really hard. And if the dog doesn't want to do the job, it's just not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was reading about some laws. That there was a law that I came across, Layla's Law. I don't know. I didn't see how long ago that was passed, but it was said that it makes it a crime to interfere with or injure a guide dog or service animal assisting a person who is blind. Now, was this specific to a guide dog for the blind, or was it any service dog?
The law is for any service dog. Again, remembering that that's the definition is of service dog. Guide dogs really don't have a definition.
Right.
The person who was very instrumental in getting this law passed had a guide dog by the name of Layla, who had been attacked in his neighborhood in Montlake Terrace a couple of times. And Layla finally had to be retired. It's extremely hard on working service dogs if they're involved in dog-to-dog aggression because they become very neurotic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons we're having Dr. Overall come and speak to us at our conference about that topic.
Yeah.
And so Layla's Law applies to all service dogs. And if somebody willfully allows their dog to interfere with a working service dog, or if a person interferes knowingly, and I don't mean someone coming up and saying, may I pet your dog, but, you know, barks at your dog or makes faces at your dog or lets their dog run free and accost your dog, it is against the law in the state of Washington.
Mm-hmm. Now, is it against the law to just have a dog running free anyway? I mean, doesn't that break a leash law?
Depending on where you are, yes. If you know, in the city of Seattle, it's against leash laws to have a dog running free. But, you know, a dog on the end of a flexi lead can get pretty far away from its owner and can interfere with a working dog. One of our club members was parking in the Tacoma Mall parking lot, and she let her her dog out of the side of her van, and a pit bull jumped out of the window of the car next to hers and attacked her dog.
Mm.
Had been left in a very hot car, so totally irresponsible pet owner to begin with.
Yeah. And that's just something that, you know, I've talked about quite a bit on the show and just in general about, you know, especially in living in an urban environment or any environment where there's more density of people, you just have to be so careful. And walking down a city street, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've seen somebody walking, you know, in downtown Seattle with their dog extended 20 feet ahead of them on a retractable leash. And then the dog's crossing intersections with, you know, obviously not looking both ways because it can't. And it's just, you know, people just have to be so careful to protect their own dogs from getting, especially if the dog has aggression issues, that you don't let your dog get into a situation like that. And to then see this happening for people who have a service dog, and, you know, in Layla's case where it really caused behavioral problems for her. And you know, I think her handler was a man, is that right?
Man.
And that he, you know, was afraid to leave his house now because there's this, you know, aggressive dog roaming the neighborhood.
It is a problem. The German Shepherd that was attacked at the Tacoma Mall had to be retired. We actually tried a little medication to and then worked on retraining, but she just became so hypervigilant that
shepherds are so sensitive
that we just decided the best thing to do was to not make her work anymore.
Mm-hmm. So, and I did read, too, that there was something, an initiative around U.S. airport service animal relief areas. So is that something that's in the works, or?
No, the Department of Transportation has mandated that every airport have a service dog relief area. We're trying to encourage the airlines not only to have one inside or outside, but also to have one inside. And SeaTac does have an inside service dog relief area.
That's great. Yeah. Well, that's excellent. Well, let's take a break, and we'll be back in just a few minutes for more conversation with Gene Hample, president of Assistance Dog Club of Puget Sound. You're listening to the Dog Talk Show on Alternative Talk 1150.
I love my dog as much as I love you. But you may say my dog will always come through.
Camley Electric Incorporated is a full-service electrical contractor. From simple home repairs to full remodels, new construction, and small commercial projects, our qualified electricians do it all. We pride ourselves on our workmanship and professional standards, delivered with value in mind. Located in historic Ballard, Camley Electric serves the greater Seattle metropolitan area. Licensed, bonded, and insured. Camley Electric welcomes all inquiries about your electrical needs. Visit the website KemleyElectric.com. That's K-E-M-L-Y Electric.com.
Hi, I'm Joy Turner, host of Talk With Your Animals, the show that lets you talk with your animals Wednesdays at 3 p.m. As a medium, I talk with your companions live on air to find the answers to the questions you want to ask. Call in and ask about health, behavior, transitions in life, or anything else. Even talk with animals who have crossed over. Animals have wonderful things to say. Join us for a fun-filled and inspiring hour Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Talk with your animals with Joy Turner, the show you and your animal companions are going to love.
Looking for new ways to find light, love, healing, and balance in your life, your family, and your work? You're not alone. I'm Jeanette Dames, host of The Soul's Edge, Tuesdays at noon, right here on Alternative Talk 1150. And I want to help you bring your life back to life. Listen to nourish your life or call for an angel reading. Join me on The Soul's Edge, Tuesdays at noon, right here on Alternative Talk 1150.
Do you want to improve your health, take less medicine, or avoid medication at all? The naturopathic physicians at the Institute of Complementary Medicine, with over 60 years of experience, will help you on natural, practical solutions for better health. Ready for your annual checkup, feeling stressed or anxious, or have a chronic problem like allergies, diabetes, or sleep issues? Call 206-726-0034 or go to www.icmedicine.com to schedule an appointment. We're located on First Hill in Seattle, and most insurance is accepted. 206-726-0034. icmedicine.com. Natural medicine at its best.
On the AM band at 1150 and on the FM HD band at 98.9 HD3. Alternative Talk 1150.
To make me realize that I love my dog as much as I love you.
Welcome back to the Dog Talk Show. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. You're listening to Alternative Talk, 1150 AM. We are back today with Gene Hample, president of Assistance Dog Club of Puget Sound. Welcome back, Gene.
Thank you.
So I'd like to talk with you about more about laws, which I know that you just have a wealth of knowledge around this area. And I'm really curious about, and I know not too much about it. So I'm in, you know, reading a bit, like learning about Layla's Law and the airport service animal relief areas and all these types of things. You know, I'm curious as to sort of where, what direction things are sort of going and where you see that there are some holes for people, you know, protecting the rights of people with, who have service animals. You know, the safety of the animals themselves, like for Layla's Law and that type of thing.
Well, the definition of service dog as it currently stands, they use the term actually service animal, and it's any animal that's individually trained to perform tasks or do work for a person with a disability. And when the original definition came out, they didn't assume that people were going to be using or trying to say they were using snakes and iguanas and other farm animals and parrots. And so it appears that the law will now, the definition itself is going to be tightened. And any animal that is not domestic or domesticated would never be considered. So any of your wild animals, such as snakes and iguanas and parrots, will not be considered. And that law was supposed to come out 2 years ago. It went back into committee, and now it's back. And it hasn't been changed yet. And so we're very interested to find out what they finally decide on.
Mm-hmm.
They were also going to change somewhat the definition, really mandating that the animals be trained to perform tasks or do work, and comfort is not considered. All of us get great comfort out of our pets.
Yeah.
But that doesn't make our pet necessarily a service animal, because, mm-hmm. we may not be disabled.
Right.
But just because a person is disabled, a pet is not going to be a service animal. And so I think they're going to tighten down a little bit more, and so that we won't be seeing so many strange species out there that cannot be housebroken, cannot be really trained, and people are calling them service animals.
Mm.
So that's one of the changes I see. The other change that happened about 2 years ago now and is being questioned by the disabilities, the IAADP has sent a position paper, is that if you want to fly and you're a person with a disability, the law allows you, the Department of Transportation, the DOT, allows you, the Air Carrier Access Act allows you to fly with your service dog or your service animal. But the Air Carrier Act also allowed people to travel with emotional support animals. And several years back, there was a miniature pig on a plane, who potbelly pig that got loose, and everyone started questioning, you know, the validity of allowing animals on. So the people who had emotional support animals had to provide 48 hours notice and a letter from their healthcare provider saying that they actually needed that animal to fly. And these animals were not trained for anything.
So this was an emotional support pig?
This was an emotional support pig.
Okay.
And so there have been so much fraudulent use of the right to bring a dog on an airplane. People were getting letters from their doctor. People, unfortunately, with show dogs didn't want to put their dogs in baggage. And we all understand the dangers of transporting animals.
Mm-hmm.
And they started sort of broadening the horizons of who could fly.
Mm-hmm.
And the Department of Transportation and the airlines realized that. And so they looked into it and decided that the one thing that most of these people were saying was that they had psychiatric disabilities or emotional disabilities. So they changed the law to say that a person who has a mental illness, who is traveling with, whether it's an emotional support animal or a service dog, would have to provide 48 hours notice and a letter from their health care provider, did not have to put diagnosis down, but would have to say that this was a person with a mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just felt within the service dog community that this is just discriminatory against a disability, that a disability is a disability. What the DOT is going to do about that, there's been no change made, and I haven't heard anything that there's any changes in the offing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's has been a concern within the disabilities community.
Mm. It seems like a tough, sort of a tough topic, because, you know, on the one hand, they're really wanting to, for people who are bringing a service animal on an airplane, you know, they're really wanting to prevent it sort of being abused by, you know, someone just saying, this is my, you know, emotional support dog, and, you know, and then just kind of going. And so it's sort of this, like, well, how do we sort of filter those people out and make sure that the dogs or animals that are traveling are legitimate without, you know, requiring, without discriminating?
Well, one of the things that I'm concerned that may happen is that the Department of Transportation, or the Air Carrier Act, is an act all unto itself. So they could, the airlines could choose to require anybody who is traveling with a service animal to provide 48 hours notice and proof of disability. That's one alternative. And then, of course, we're not discriminating against anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's going to happen at this point, we really don't know. I think that if it wasn't so easy to get a vest online and to people weren't fraudulent by nature, that it wouldn't be such a problem. But mm-hmm. unfortunately, fraud within within service dog is very big. You'll go. A friend of mine just sent me an email. She was in an Albertsons, and a dog walked around the corner. It was a beautiful Dalmatian holding its flexi lead handle in its mouth, and there was nobody there. And she had her service dog with her, and she said she continued on her way, and then a little later noticed this dog, still not leashed, with its flexi in its mouth, standing by a person at the counter, and who said, well, it's my service dog. Now, first of all, service dogs have to obey leash laws,
mm-hmm.
so there would be no reason, unless the dog was actually performing a task, like it had to walk further than your leash to pick a can off the shelf, there'd be no reason why it would ever be off leash. So the stores are very confused, and people are, you know, doing things that are fraudulent.
Mm-hmm. And then there's, isn't it part of the law where you're not allowed to require, like you're not allowed to inquire? If somebody says that it's a service dog, is it illegal to say, I doubt it, show me proof?
Well, the law, there's a wonderful handout on the ADA website, mm-hmm. Called Business Brief Service Dog or Service Animal. And it tells you exactly what a business can ask. And if a person goes into a store with a service dog and the business owner has a question about whether the dog is a service dog, you can ask the person two questions. You can ask them, is this your service dog? And you can also ask, what tasks are the dog trained to perform?
Mm-hmm.
And if the person can't answer those questions, you can, in fact, ask them to leave.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that you have to understand, that if a dog is not acting appropriately, so that we call it health and safety, but if a dog is growling or barking and cannot be brought under control, you can ask the person as a business, you can ask the person to leave. But if you ask the person to leave, you really have to provide them with the service, because you're not asking them to leave, you're asking them to take their dog out.
Mm.
So that you could say to the person, I'm sorry, but your dog can't be here. What is it that you were looking for? I can get that for you.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than just saying, you can't come in here.
Right. I see. And where do you see, you know, if you could write the laws, where do you see that there's some holes or, you know, areas where things could be either revised or just new laws written?
Well, in the service dog industry, we refer to it as the C word. And that is that I really personally feel that all service dog teams should be certified. There mm-hmm. should be a standard certification that if you want to take a dog in public, that you have to pass a test similar to the canine good citizenship test. And there is a test that Assistance Dog International has called the public access test that all program dogs need to pass. And I feel that if program dogs need to pass it, then probably owner-trained dogs should have to pass it, too. And then I can't drive a car without a license.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ask me to see my license, if you're the police, I have to show you my license. And I really think that it would be to the benefit of the service dog community if service dogs were certified. That is not a popular very popular within the service dog community in general. For a lot of the logistics of trying to get it done, is just not easy.
Mm-hmm.
But it would stop a lot of the fraud.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a caller, Jean, on line one, who has a question for you. We have Margaret on line one. Hi, Margaret.
Hey, Julie. Hey, Jean.
Hello.
So you have a question for Jean?
Well, I do. And I'm a little confused listening to the show here today about the difference between an emotional support dog and a service dog. What is the difference, Jean?
Okay. A service dog is a dog that's individually trained to perform tasks or do actual work for a person with a disability. An emotional support animal provides comfort and companionship, but is not taught to perform specific tasks.
So the but you said under the Air Carrier Access Act that emotional support dogs are allowed, but I thought you had to have a disability under the Air Carrier Access Act to even meet the requirements, even with an emotional support dog.
An emotional support dog is used by a person with a disability.
Oh, I see. So you have a disability, and does the comfort and care that the dog brings you have to have something to do with your disability?
Yes.
So it has to make your life easier.
That's
in some way, or bring you comfort and care that mitigates the symptoms of your disability?
In some ways. For example, there are people who are terrified of flying, but they feel more comfortable if they have their dog to pet.
Oh, actually during the flight.
During the flight. And so that would be an emotional support animal. The dog isn't trained any more than my pet is trained, but petting the dog makes the person feel better. Petting the dog is not a dog doing a task.
So being terrified of flying, that you would say that legally that would be considered a disability by an airline?
For some people, their psychiatrist or their mental health provider would consider that a disability. The airlines isn't the one that makes the diagnosis of what the disability is. The mental health care provider does.
Right, and I understand that has to be a disability that's recognized in the DSM, the manual of psychiatric illnesses.
That is correct.
Okay.
Though they don't have to put down exactly what, they don't have to disclose to the airlines exactly what the disability is.
All right, so that seems to be a pretty fine line, though, in some ways. If I have a disability based on a psychiatric problem that's recognized in the DSM-4, and I've got an animal that helps to mitigate the symptoms of that disability, the difference then is if that animal is trained to perform a particular task versus just being there to help me feel better?
Correct. The presence of the dog alone is not sufficient.
Okay. Is the dog have to be trained to perform a task?
Or to do work, way the law reads, a task or do work.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks very much for clearing that up.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for listening, Margaret. All right, well, it's time for a break. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Jean Hampel, president of Assistance Dog Club of Puget Sound. You're listening to the Dog Talk Show on Alternative Talk 1150.
He just naturally followed us.
Every time I come to town, the boys keep kicking my doggy around. Makes no difference if he is a hound. I gotta quit kicking my doggy around.
Do you have an injury, old or new, that won't heal? Are you fighting a cold or illness you can't kick? Do you feel like you've tried everything and are still struggling to find wellness and balance in your physical health? Have you been unimpressed with acupuncture in the past? For over a decade, Robert Meduzia has been making a difference for people who thought they had exhausted their options. Don't settle for pain and illness. Call 425-828-6190. That's 425-828-6190. Again, 425-828-6190. The Acupuncture and Sports Clinic of Kirkland. Heal faster, play longer.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to Jones & Company Pets in Marysville, we cover the world of animals. This week, it's shelter, rescue, sanctuary, and anything that helps our animal friends Sunday. We'll check in with the birds, wildlife, and horses as usual, and then a special interview with Posado's Safe Haven. We'll talk about some of the recent changes going on out there, and we'll have all the details about their huge fundraiser happening at the Seattle Center August 1st. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. 50.
This is Julie Forbes, dog training, behavior, and nutrition specialist, and owner of Sensitive Dog, thoughtful guidance for you and your dog. If your dog needs basic obedience training, a behavior evaluation, or food consultation, I can help you. Call me at 206-372-7399 or visit my website, www.sensitivedog.com. I teach group obedience classes, in-home lessons, and evaluations, and a two-week intensive training program called Higher Education. Again, I'm Julie Forbes, Seattle's dog behavior training and nutrition specialist. www.sensitivedog.com.
Picking up dog or cat poop is a necessary pet owner's ritual. Plastic poop bags put in the trash end up in landfills, produce methane gas, and contaminate our hard-to-get clean water. Bokashi Cycle's Pet Cycle fermenting system provides a simple, sustainable solution to a growing problem. Pet waste is safely and rapidly transformed into a product that restores nutrients and microbes to the soil. Pet Cycle is an easy and natural system you can use at home to end polluting. Visit www.bokashicycle.com or call 1-800-714-2130 to order your Pet Cycle system today.
Negativity and fear, two staples of talk radio. Well, we figured we'd try something different. Alternative Talk, 1150.
Sam Johnson's store, Pastel Yates came out the door. When Jim, he stopped to smell a box, they shied at him a bunch of rocks.
Every time I come to town, the boys keep kicking my bony round.
Welcome back to the Dog Talk Show. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. You're listening to Alternative Talk, 1150 AM. Eric, you always keep me guessing with the songs you choose.
They gotta keep... Gotta quit kicking my dog around. You don't know that one?
No.
Classic.
Haven't heard it. We're back today with Gene Hampel, president of Assistance Dog Club of Puget Sound. And we could talk for a whole show, plus probably, about laws. And but I'd like to talk more about your club and the work that you do and, you know, where and when you meet and kind of learn a little bit more about your work with the Assistance Dog Club of Puget Sound.
Well, the Assistance Dog Club Puget Sound is really housed down in Tacoma, Washington. Mm-hmm. We have members all over the state and a few out-of-state members. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, our membership drive every year is at the end of August because one of our benefits from the Assistance Dog Club of Puget Sound is we enroll all of our members with the help of grant money into the International Association of Assistance Dog Partners. We want to be able to provide them with the latest information, mm-hmm. as well as some of the medical benefits that the International Association of Assistance Dog Partners has been able to get from Nutramax and Fort Dodge. So that they can get their advantage-free and some of their medications that we use for our dogs. So mm-hmm. it's just a benefit for all of us. Mm-hmm. We meet on the fourth Saturday of the month down in Tacoma at the Tacoma Area Coalition for People with Disabilities. And we always have an educational speaker. Mm-hmm. Variety in August. I'll be doing a talk on temperament, socialization, threshold, and rewards. Mm-hmm. And we've had speakers from the fair housing talking about the fair housing laws. We've had Alaskan Airlines personnel come down and talk about TSA and bringing dogs through airlines. So we always are looking for something that people can learn, mm-hmm. so that not only is it a social group and that you get to be around other people with service dogs with similar interests. For our members only, we have a training class during the week on Tuesdays for an hour at TACID, which is the Tacoma Area Coalition. And we do a CGC every year. We do public access testing every year. We try yearly to go to the fire department to keep the dogs up on the noise and people in strange clothes. So, you know, we do provide both the social but also the educational component of service dog ownership.
And this is for both people who are partnered with a service dog or are training a dog to be a service dog?
That's correct. We have people in the club who have service dogs in training. We have people that are partnered. We have family members, mm-hmm. and we have trainers. Mm-hmm. I don't have a disability, and I've been a dog trainer for a long time. And we have a few other trainers. We actually have one excellent trainer who also has a disability and a service dog. So that we're a very broad group of people. And we really encourage family members to be a part of the group, because sometimes the introduction of a service dog into a family can really upset the family dynamics.
Oh, I just lost my train of thought. I had a question for you. Oh, I remember. What are some of the biggest challenges that you see people meet once after they've been, either after they've trained a service dog or have been paired with a service dog from a program?
Keeping up on training. Because as we know, we all get lazy. And dogs are no different than we are. And a lot of times, it's important that programs give the people the skills to continue to train their dog, because training never ends. And that is the biggest. The other is weight. I see more overweight service dogs, because people with disabilities tend not to exercise their service dogs enough. And so that the health of the dog is really affected by their weight, because the dogs don't get enough exercise.
And that's something that's certainly not exclusive to service dog community, but, you know, obesity being such a huge, probably one of the number one health issues with dogs. And I mean, probably people and their pets alike.
I've been I was at a meeting in Sun Valley while you were on your boat. And the program there has started teaching all of their dogs to use a treadmill. And are actually doing treadmill training, and they're finding that the treadmill training is not only improving the dog's physical condition, but it has actually, just like runners get to clear their heads, they're finding that the treadmill training is really giving the dogs a way to relieve their stress.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've had a few clients over the years who have asked that we train their dogs to a treadmill. One had a back injury and was not able, it was a Rottweiler, and was not able to get him out for his exercise when her husband was away traveling, or, you know. And it's a really cool thing to watch them kind of, you know, figure it out, like, what's going on here? I'm moving, but, you know, I'm not. And then to see the weight come off and to see them kind of get into that rhythm. It's so important. I mean, exercise, you know, for dogs, it's the mental and the physical energy that needs an outlet.
Well, so many people with service dogs think that, well, my dog is out with me all day long. But the truth of the matter is that it's laying under the desk all day long and not getting the running time. And understandably, that a person with a disability going to a dog park is very difficult. Plus, with all of the time, energy, and emotional relationship with a service dog, they are constantly afraid that if they were to take their dog someplace like a dog park, that the dog could get injured, which is a very viable concern.
For anybody, I'm not a huge fan of dog parks myself, but I could especially see not wanting a service animal, service dog in a dog park. So do you have dogs?
I have a dog. Mm-hmm. I used to have many dogs. I now consider myself semi-retired. I have one golden retriever. Her name is Gabby, and she is an absolutely beautiful little blonde. I call her princess for more reasons than one, and she thinks she is a princess. Mm-hmm. She was supposed to be my husband's last hunting dog, and she really prefers not to chase ducks.
Yeah.
So hunting, I don't think, will be her name, but I'm doing nose work with her, and she absolutely loves canine nose work, so it's giving her a good outlet.
Yeah.
And we do a lot of hiking and ski touring.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. There's a book that I've almost finished reading by the author Dean Koontz. He wrote a book about his dog Trixie, who he and his wife adopted from Canine Companions for Independence. And she was, you know, one of a candidate to be a service dog. And I don't remember the reason, but it wasn't a good fit for her. And it's called A Big Little Life. And it's a really a great story about their life with her and her personality. And she's a golden retriever. And it's a really cute book. I recommend for an easy read. Very cute. Have you always had goldens?
I have always had goldens. I've had Goldens for 39 years, and I had one Welsh Corgi.
Right.
And my Welsh corgi thought she was a golden and was a wonderful swimmer and retriever.
Uh-huh.
But she also loved herding the ducks that we had at that time,
yeah,
as well as the golden retrievers.
Yeah.
She was definitely in charge.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Well, Jean, it's been wonderful to have you on the show. Thanks so much for coming today. And like I said, I'll have all of the information. Jean's website, which is www.dogsaver.org/ADC, and the website for International Association of Assistance Dog Partners is www.iaadp.org. You can find information about the conference that's coming up at the end of September on both of those websites. I'll have those posted on the Dog Talk Show website, which is www.dogtalkshow.com. And I wanted to lastly dedicate this show to Grandma Bolts, Darcy's grandma, who just passed away on Sunday. So this show is for Grandma. Thanks again, Jean, for being here, and I look forward to the conference in September.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, we'll be here same time, same place next Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. Dog Talk Show on Alternative Talk 1150.